better.
I like it.
Well, there are two things to be done. First of all, we put him in the hospital and withdraw all television.
I see.
And then we give him this.
Radio!
Hi, I'm Daniel Kielman.
And I'm Kalma.
And this is episode number 159 of Test Patterns. Kyle,
it is.
I'm just going to jump right to it. How was your 4th of July weekend?
It was good. I took a train ride both ways up to San Luis Obispo. It took about, I think it was like 8 hours. Because I didn't make any switches. Like, there was an option to switch at like L.A. Train station. But I just stayed on there. Did a lot of reading. Visited some friends from college. So it was pretty cool. I actually didn't see any fireworks for 4th of July, which is crazy. Because a bunch of the... it was just like a bunch, like, that whole area, like, it gets real foggy this time of year. So a lot of them were just canceled because couldn't see anything anyway. And we didn't really want to drive, like, further up, like, either north or south of where we were on the coast. But, yeah, that's what I did.
Very lovely. I also did not see any fireworks.
Yeah. Did you have any fireworks at like a house or anything, or just?
No, because where I live, for many that don't know, where I live, we're not allowed to do fireworks on our street because it's a bit out in the sticks, dangerous.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to do that. Although inadvertently every year, I think somebody still does do it somewhere, just like a couple or whatever. But no, we don't do them here. So I actually, where I grew up more in the suburbs and we were able to do it there. But out here, we're not able to. And I have been able to get away with doing it a couple of times in the last few years. Like you were there a few years ago when I was house sitting at that one house.
Yeah, I think I told you that was maybe the second time I had done that. Because, I mean,
I thought it was the
Loomis.
First, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess it was the first, like, on the street. Because there's like with that amount of fireworks. But yeah, most of the time I would just drive somewhere because can't really set off fireworks in Loomis because of fire restrictions and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been able to arrange that every now and then, but no, this year wasn't one of those years. And I also had a good 4th of July weekend, but very, very productive. I mean, I had a lot of fun. I had a great, great, great fun. But I also... had a lot of stuff to do. Helped my sister move. They were moving downtown, so helped her move. And
that's always good to have help with.
Yes, that's very true. And no, it was a fun adventure though. And then my birthday was over the weekend too, so celebrated that with friends and families and loved ones. And had a great time. And
cool. You're 30 now. How's it feel?
I know. I'm old. I'm out of touch. This is the reason why Test Patterns is ending, is because I'm 30 now, and I'm no longer in touch with today's sensible youth.
You're unplugged now. You're just going to listen to all the stuff you listened to growing up. You can listen to some Offspring, Pearl Jam.
Some Limp Bizkit, some Korn. No, it's all just that. Nothing else. Nothing. Music never got better than that. Movies never got better than 1998 with movies starring... Steven Seagal and Jet Li. I don't know who's in movies back then. Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, we all still listen to or watch Austin Powers. Was that 99?
We saw Spy Who Shagged Me, I remember.
Oh, God. How many? I remember. Three of those all together?
There was three. Yeah, there's three. There's been a long rumored fourth one that I think Mike Myers has teased that he's going to make. I remember for the second one, I saw that with you. I remember it was a surprise because you called me like, I think it was that night. It was a Thursday. This is in the late 90s, people. Man, I am old. This is in the late 90s. This is a different time, different era. Yeah. And you called me and you were like, hey, I got a hot tip that Austin Powers, they're showing it. It was Thursday. Movies come out on Friday, people. This is how it was back then.
Yeah.
And you were like, they're going to be showing it tonight at 10 p.m. Like, we can go there and see it early before everyone else does.
Man, they do that all the time now.
Well, now it's standard. Now they do it on all sorts of days of the week. But then it was a novelty. And I remember, like, your dad was taking you and I don't know if anybody else, like, maybe your sister, maybe somebody else went. I don't know. But either way, I just remember that. And it was like, oh, shit, we got to go. And I remember coming with – I remember I went. And it was a great time. That was a fantastic – for a – for a 13-year-old or 14-year-old, however old I was, young boy, to see a silly movie on a Thursday night, like, it was fantastic. It was everything I wanted.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I haven't seen those movies since then, but I was really into them. Like, that and, like, all the Jim Carrey movies, like, all those hit at the exact right time for being a teenager.
And yet you still have an Ace Ventura poster up at your bedroom at home.
I don't know where those came from, but they kind of align like a film strip, because it's the finest film, Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. And they just have all these terrible lines from the movie. Like, I don't know. I don't even remember what they were, but yeah.
Yeah, it has him saying them, and they're all like those little like cartoon bubble talking bubbles where he's saying lines from the movie. And it's from When Nature Calls, which is not the... Which most of the lines from that movie are just recycled ones from the first movie, but there are a lot of lines. I've seen...
Right, like, When Nature... Healy.
Yeah, that's from both of them, obviously. Yeah. In the second one, I know that the line, like a glove, that one is used a bunch of times. I When Nature Calls is also one of those weird movies that I've seen more times than I've seen probably my favorite film, because growing up, it was on... I never saw it in theaters, but it was on TV ad nauseum, like, over and over again. And I just ended up watching it, and I would just like, oh, When Nature Calls is on. And I just ended up watching it again and again. I've seen that movie way too many times.
Yeah, exactly. Even though I had the VHS, like, it was on TV so much, like, I didn't even use the VHS that much.
Yeah, and when I was a kid, I so didn't get so many of the jokes in that movie. It'd be interesting to watch again. Man, we should almost do that for the finale. Like, there's a ton of sex jokes in it that just flew over my head when I came out. I did not get it at all.
Yeah, I just remember all the bat guano stuff, and then the rhino birth scene.
Oh God! Oh my God! Yes.
Yeah. Beautiful.
When I saw that part of the movie, I remember. Okay, so that the joke of that scene is that he's like, you know, he's all the rhino, the air conditioning in the rhino, that his animatronic rhino that he's in because he's doing some spine breaks out. Down. And so he's all hot, he takes off his clothes, and he has to crawl out the rhino, and then this tourist group comes by, and they see this happening, and it looks like the rhino is giving birth to Jim Carrey. And when I saw that, I remember, this is as like a, you know, 12-year-old Daniel Keelman, I was like, this tourist group is the dumbest tourist group in the world. Like, they really think that, like, this is such idiot, like, that is the dumbest thing
like
ever.
Yeah, they're, like, snapping photos, and like, oh my God, what is happening?
Yeah, I'm 12, and I don't have any, my sense of comedy is, like, man falls down, that's funny. But even I'm calling shenanigans on this joke. I'm like, no, this, I don't see it. There's a loss of innocence that moment, that's what it was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you started with, like, the pinky finger and then the fist and then just like ripped it open.
It's one of those jokes like I already saw it coming, and then when I saw it, I'm like, no, this group is stupid. Like this, I don't like that.
I will not have this.
I will not laugh at this.
I will not
no.
stand for this.
No. So.
Oh man.
Yes. All right. Well, before we get started, Kyle, any other exciting things you'd like to share before we get going on this week's episode, talking about all these different things?
I know it's probably the last time I talk about comic books, but I gotta recommend this recent comic book that I read called Seconds it's basically the guy that did the Scott Pilgrim stuff, Brian, I think his name is Brian O'Malley, and it's good. It's just one hardcover book. It's got the same kind of art style as Scott Pilgrim, but more, not as fantastical or superhero oriented. But yeah, I recently got that because I went to a comic book shop in SLO, and it's good. So it's my last one.
This is interesting because I've actually read Seconds.
Oh yeah, how'd you like it?
Yes, I liked it a lot. Thought it was very, very touching, very sweet, and really great. Has a really, really cool gimmick to it, if you want to say, or just like some story element, and it does a really good job with it. And it was really, really. Creative. I liked it a lot. So, yes, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think a lot of those, you know, like Blankets or Seconds like that, like I'm gravitating a little more towards those these days. Or even Black Hole, we talked about things that are just like kind of younger versions, like just basic drama, melodrama kind of stuff is in the right spot.
One of the ones you just mentioned, I wasn't a black hole was a little too just
it's
weird for my
it's
taste.
A little
but
weird.
I,
yeah.
But I mean, I really, I'm a big fan of, man, I like my comics like as melodramatic as possible, really. Like, I love the ones that are just like straight up stories about people. Like every no superhero elements, no fantastical things, just people. Like Blankets, you said, is great. Seconds is good. I love Asterios Polyp. Yeah,
that one's really good.
I like them as just like melodramatic as possible. Yeah, because those are great.
I think I like that juxtaposition between like having, because a lot of those all have like almost like psychedelic imagery, but then it's for really mundane things about, you know, some middle-aged man or people or like kids in high school. So it kind of works really well. Actually, if you borrow, it's a three-part book collection called Essex County, and it's all about like just like small towns in Canada and kind of the same stuff, like kids growing up and parents and that kind of dichotomy. So
yeah, I think I also like what all those ones that we mentioned, that does sound interesting. I'd appreciate that. They all are interesting because they take this mundane, you know, everyday lifestyle problems, but they still do, they use the medium of comics, of, you know, graphic arts to make it fantastical, or make the people have a really interesting way. Like, it's not just, you know, people talking, obviously.
Yeah.
So
I
think that's
and
why
it's relatable. It's not like Justice League 50 through 56.
Reboot number 75. Yeah, whatever's going on.
Yeah.
In this one, Batman is really Superman, and Superman is a frog or something. Like, I don't know. All right. Well, with that being said, let's move on to this week's episode. First up, we're going to be discussing the, what do we label this as? New television series is what we label. I thought I had them mixed up. The new television series from MTV, which I don't think we've reviewed any MTV shows on here.
I don't think so.
Scream, based on the movie series of the same name. After that, we have a, I don't know what we'd call this, a modern classic video game. I wouldn't call it a slept on necessarily. I think it was pretty successful. So
yeah, because there's a sequel coming.
Exactly. Modern classic video game, Dishonored. And lastly, we have a classic album from Metal Vikings, Megadeth, with their second album, Peace Sells, But Who's Buying? So lots of fun coming at you soon. Very beautiful. Any other beautiful things, Kyle, before we get going here on screen?
Not really.
Okay, then please do not make any sounds at all, and don't look around your shoulder. And first up, we're going to be discussing the new MTV television series, Scream.
Music on. Tyler?
You can't do a slasher movie as a TV series. Slasher movies burn bright and fast. By the time the first body is found, it's only a matter of time before the bloodbath commences.
Say you get a room, but I don't want the cleanup.
You slept with Nina.
No, wait.
Last week saw the debut of the MTV television drama horror series, Scream. Based on the Wes Craven films of the same name. The Wes Craven film, Scream, was a landmark horror film from, 1995, 96? I forget when that movie came out.
Yeah, I think that was the first one.
Yeah, there we go. And there eventually
ended up
led
being four.
What was that?
There ended up being four of them, but yeah.
There ended up being four, right. The last one coming out just a couple years ago, actually. Yeah. And was a very... And this television series is certainly in the same vein, strictly in... It doesn't necessarily have the same killer, because we don't really know. It's all new characters, but it has the same idea behind it, which is just that it's a bunch of kids, teenagers, high school kids, they're in a horror television series, and they are kind of self-aware about horror films, and so there is this, you know, acknowledgement of the existence. It's not a satire exactly, but it's definitely a self-aware horror film series. And that was the novelty of Scream, is that the characters in the film knew about, you know, horror films at the time. So doing that again. This television series starts off by following a teenager named Aubrey, who is caught in a video is made of her making out with another girl, and it goes viral and basically ends up embarrassing her at the school. And it's about her, kind of centers around her, but also centers around a couple of other characters in this cast of high school kids. And then you also have one of the characters' moms was apparently had some history with a serial killer also. So there's lots of killing going on in this small town, to say the least.
Yeah.
The main hook of the show, I suppose, is that it has one character who is almost verbatim a carbon copy of the Jamie Kennedy character from the original Scream movies. The character Noah, played by John Carna, who is talking in this first episode at the very end. He's talking about slasher films, and he says, you can't do a slasher movie as a TV series.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So that's, and what are we watching?
And I couldn't agree more. Like, it kind of, well, it's just like, it doesn't make itself, the show doesn't, like, provide itself its own sense of identity. Like, even the beginning of the pilot, like, it's a pretty good reimagining of, like, the very first movie's opening scene with, like, that famous killing with Drew Barrymore. But I think that one ends up being better because just, like,
it's
been so iconic. Like, this one's, like, it's got the cell phone video stuff. It's tried at modernizing it. But, I mean, other than the mask being different and kind of, like, the character being different, like, it's pretty much the same. And doesn't,
yeah.
And even all the self-aware stuff, they're not adding anything new to the table. And, you know, adding characters that are homosexual or, you know, trotting out, you know, a lot of the cliches, but not really, like, comment on them in any witty way. It just feels really...
Right.
I mean,
right. I mean,
I think you... Did you see the ratings? Like, it had, like, 6 million viewers, so...
Oh, no, I didn't.
It's doing really
gosh.
Well, but...
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not... Wow, that's insane. I felt like this first episode is just a shorter version of the first film. Like, it really does play, like, it's not just, you're absolutely right, it's not just that scene. I mean, it does a couple little twists and turns that differentiates itself from that. Like, that opening scene, you're absolutely right, it has this girl on a cell phone, and there's somebody, like, instead of talking to her on the other end, they're texting her, and at first she's just, like, you know, playing along with him, but then it turns out more, you know, serious, ulterior, bloody things are happening, and then it all escalates, and it's effective. I mean, it's not suspenseful, but it's certainly, it had my attention. But then later on, you have a scene where one of the characters goes to the garage, and, like, she's, you know, hearing things, and something's going on, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, like, this is just like in the first film. There's a character that goes in the garage there and gets killed.
Yeah, the people I was watching it with, they're, like, they're not even familiar with, like, the Scream, like, the rest of the movies, and they're like, oh, I remember this from the first Scream.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of very obvious references, and then, again, the really most obvious one is that character I mentioned who's, like, basically... In the first film, Jamie Kennedy's is very, very self-aware. He's like a film nerd who knows all about horror films. And he has some really great scenes in the Scream movies. And this kid is doing almost the exact same thing. And that leads me to another point. The acting in this is terrible. I mean, even for,
it's really campy. Especially when all the cliched characters are interacting with, like, the jock interacting with... the nerdy kind of person.
Yeah, like, I get that horror films aren't supposed to have the greatest acting to begin with, so I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not expecting Oscar-caliber performances here, but this is, like, some really canned acting.
The scene with the hot cheerleader or whatever, and the teacher, that was pretty bad. That was really bad.
And then also, I mean, man, I guess I really am feeling now old, too, because all these kids look like they're all... like in their
30 years old
as well. Almost. Like, I'm just like, you are all in high school. Like, give me a break.
They're so, like, man, I've been in high school for 10 years. Just let me out. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it was interesting to watch this because I've been hearing for so many years about MTV's original programming, how they've been trying to get away from some of the reality stuff, and they have more scripted series. Like, they have Teen Wolf is fairly popular as well. And Awkward is another popular series, or that one's over now, but so they're successful, I know that, but I have not watched anything on MTV in a very, very long time.
Well, another thing that kind of rubbed me the wrong way is, like, I think they do this with their other, like, drama programs, is they play a bunch of, like tons of songs during the movie, whether it's in the party or they're, like, on the way to some other event or they're at school, and they're all terrible songs, like, no name, like, pop group. Like, maybe there's a few that I aren't aware of that they're popular, but, like, they had an opportunity, like, kind of like what OC had. Like, that's, like, super soap opera-y. You know, it went off the rails they could, you know, kind of plant a flag like, yeah, we have this history of presenting like good music, but you know, I guess they've gone so far away from that that my criticism is just kind of like, yeah, everyone knows that they're not really doing that anymore.
MTV I think still does do, even though I haven't watched a series, I think they do still incorporate music into their like advertising, I guess. But I for me I felt like this show, it's trying to be, it makes some pretty good self-aware comments, like that Noah character, as much as I make fun of him, he does have a point how he says that he has this other line at the end where, again, it's very self-aware, and he's saying how a slasher film could never work as a TV series because, like, all the drama is gone. Like, you have to invest in all these characters, and someone could die at any turn. And so I guess the whole suspense of this series is that maybe, you know, you're going to start watching it and really root for these characters or something, and then, like, bam, they can die at any moment, which might have been really, really inventive maybe if this show came out between the first two Scream films, you know what I mean? Like, but now we've had so many TV shows that are, yeah, like, Game of Thrones kind of already set the bar really high for that. That's the one that set it all going. And now
And you have to have a better script and like better characterizations for you even care about that. Like some of the stuff they did at the very end. Like, I mean, they lay it on thick with like kind of teases of like, oh, this character, the boyfriend is somehow connected to that first killing, and then, you know, the mom is connected to the almost kind of like a, I don't know, Jason style backstory with her original like guy that loved her, the Daisy character basically, and some of that stuff was kind of intriguing. Like I did like that origin story for the killer. And little things like I like that they changed up the mask because, you know, it does look creepy and it works. Like they make it a little less like goofy looking, which kind of works. It could work better.
Well, and
it's also been
20 years. Like they should change the mask anyway.
Right. So it just seems like they didn't, like we were saying earlier, like they didn't change enough.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to like badmouth the show too much. I don't necessarily think this is a bad show. It's just not that good. It's really, it's very, very middle of the road. Like you said, like they don't change a lot. So the source material is great. And because you don't change that much, like it's going to be okay for sure. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with the show, but I also don't think there's any reason to watch it. Like I can't imagine myself getting invested in these characters. Like, you know, it has that main character who is the one that plays Aubrey, and she's she's a little bit complicated, where she like got caught in that video, but she's saying I'm not a lesbian, but I made out with this girl, and I kind of that's an element for some interesting, you know, character development. Like that's complicated.
She's shown up like I remember she was on Arrow as like a recurring character for like 8 episodes, and then she was on The Killing for like having a whole season. So, yeah, out of the whole bunch, I think she's the most promising character,
just based on her
pedigree. And it's also new that they could try with just, like, that characterization. So yeah, hopefully that goes in a new, fresh angle.
Yeah, and I mean, that might be done on purpose, because, like, all the other kids are popular jock kids, so there's no real personality to them yet, but maybe that'll change.
They're cliches.
But also, not to be fair, she's very annoying too, because she's walking around with this video camera, and I'm so sick of seeing that on TV shows of people with cameras and recording things and stuff. And so that's annoying as well.
Well, it's also weird that she would go to this party where she knows all these people made fun of her before, but I don't know. They got to push the plot along, and they're not really there to pick apart like her reasoning. But maybe it's a thing where it's kind of like her revenge, and she ends up being the killer or somebody else associated with her.
And part of me is a little bit, I wonder how they're going to play this out. Like, are they going to actually solve who the killer is by the end of the season? Because I'm sure if it got 6 million viewers, that's insanely good, and it'll get renewed for another season. But if it, I'm wondering, like, okay, are they going to serialize this? Are they going to do one season, then, you know, have somebody else go on a ramp? Like, I don't know what their long plan is, but I'm not I'm a little bit curious who it is, but I'll just wait till it's all done and maybe I'll read the wiki page if I feel like it. Like, I don't care much to find out.
Yeah, I really like the Scream series. Like, I mean, all four of those, like, man, not so much the fourth, but like all of them have like something that I really enjoy about them. I don't know if I'll come back for this second episode. We'll see. Yeah, it's hard because, I mean, both Wes Craven and then, you know, movies like Cabin in the Woods, like, we've seen a lot of this kind of stuff done a lot better, so it's hard to, like, watch a full season of something. I mean, it worked a little better when I was kind of, like, watching it, like, almost like guilty pleasure mode with two other people that I know, and we're just joking along because it doesn't really take itself too seriously, and a lot of the Scream movies didn't either. And that's kind of part of the fun of it, and I'm sure that's why it got like good ratings if it didn't necessarily get good reviews, just because it has that mentality like, oh, let's get together on a Friday night or whatever and watch this.
Right. Yeah, I could see this being a fun thing to watch with friends, like you were saying. But yeah, at the end of the day, there's not enough for me to want to come back to this.
Not enough meat on the bone.
Not enough meat on the bone. I haven't said that in a while. Yeah, no, not enough meat on the bone. So I'm not going to make a stew of this one. I'm going to throw it in the garbage.
We got to bring it out. We got to bring it out. It's just a wet dog. It's not enough meat on the bone. All the TP cliches.
Gosh.
For a very
all right.
Show.
Any other final thoughts, Kyle, on Scream?
No, that's about it. One final thought, I guess, is if you are like diehard Scream fan, you probably aren't even gonna watch it. There's enough here, like nods to the first film that are fun, but I don't know. I'd say if you haven't seen any of those first three films, go check them out, because I think they help hold up a lot better than more serious slasher kind of movies, because they're fun and, you know, smart in ways.
I've honestly never seen, I've only seen the first one. I've never seen beyond that. And I've always meant to. It seems like one of those great modern horror films. And
The second one I think is better, because it's like, it really comments on like what sequels are, and they're like, oh,
yeah,
sequels usually suck.
I remember hearing about that. Yeah, I heard the second one was really good. Then after that, it's kind of whatever. But I'm still curious enough to see it all. So,
Yeah, more the first two. But yeah.
Excellent. All right, so Scream movies you should go see. Scream TV show, maybe not so much. But that is Scream, which airs on MTV, and it airs on Tuesdays, I believe. So, yeah, check that out. Mm-hmm. All right, next up, we're going to be discussing the classic video game from Bethesda, Dishonored.
My dear Corvo, what a sad hand fate has dealt you. The beloved Empress dead, and everyone thinks you're the killer. But we know what really happened, don't we? You don't want to end your life to the sound of idiots cheering as your head hits the muck, do you? Let's see if we can do better. And to make things interesting, my mark. Consider it a gift.
2012, Arkane Studios developed the stealth action-adventure game Dishonored, later to be published by Bethesda, who's mostly known for the Fallout and Elder Scrolls series. And the video game came out on the PS3, Xbox 360, and PC, and was not necessarily expected to be... It was kind of treated as a lower-tier game, to say the least. Not that it was expected to do poorly, but they definitely, you know, weren't expecting it to be, you know, on the level of, you know, the mainstays of the Bethesda series, the Fallouts, if you will. However, much to the surprise of everyone, the game became a huge runaway hit and racked up a lot of end-of-the-year awards for first-person games, but also for just even, like, game-of-the-year awards for that year. The game takes place in the fictional city of Dunwall in the... does it actually have a time period associated with this, like 18th century or something like that?
Yeah, it's like London, like, late
19th century.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 1800s. And you play as the game, unlike the Bethesda series, you don't create a character. This is a very story-driven game in the sense that you have a character you're playing as, you interact with the world, and you are, you know, treated as such. Your character is Corvo Atano, who is a bodyguard for the Empress of the Isles. And very early on, you are framed for the murder of the Empress, and you are marked as, and you have to become an assassin and seek revenge on those who do you. So it's basically a giant Count of Monte Cristo revenge video game. And that idea is, while a simple one, goes very, very far, because what ends up happening is you have this very relatively like brilliant in execution game where you are to go into the city, which is really, really active with energy. There's a lot of cool things going on in it. And you basically hunt down these people, and you have a lot of it has a lot of inspiration from other first-person games like the Deus Ex series and Thief, where, you know, you have an objective and you have a lot of different ways you can go about doing it. And this game, arguably, in my opinion at least, and even the BioShock series, a little bit better than those, you have a lot of different ways you can do that. Most noticeably, you can either do it very stealth-heavy, where you try not to kill anybody and just get through the sections, or you can just go all out as much as you want to kill everybody.
Yeah, you can use all your powers at just disposal and just kill all the bodies.
And that's another thing we'll get to, is that you have powers as well, right? So it gives you a lot of variety on how you take on these missions. And I think that's where the series shines the most, is that you have this option to do things, and you really have more
and
control than I think in a lot of other games in doing that.
It affects the world. Like, you'll get new objectives. It tends to be like a sore point for a lot of video game fans, but they have a really good use of, you know, you return to that kind of like hub part of the city over and over again. And sometimes you return to you return to the distillery again before, you know, go to the whorehouse where you kill the twins. And I like I just like that use of whether you're chaotic or you're not, there's going to be more and more rats. There's going to be more and more, diseased people walking around. It's going to be new side quests that open up for you. And it gives you it can be a really short game if you just blast through it, but there's so much side content and reasons to replay it. It just adds a lot of value to it.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, you have different missions that open up if you're chaos or if you're stealth.
With granny rags and all that.
Yeah. And speaking of granny rags, there's quite a notable voice cast in this game. Granny Rags doing voiced by Susan Sarandon.
John Slattery is in there.
yeah, good old guy from Mad Men. Carrie Fisher is in here, and Michael Madsen, Chloe Grace Moretz. So there's a lot of really noticeable
Lady Emily.
People here. And the game is it's definitely there's a lot of it feels like there's a lot of games that this one has drawn inspiration from, but it really does a good job of taking a lot of elements from other games and just putting it to use here, and that's what I like the most about it. I'm not necessarily engulfed with the story. There's a ton of books you can pick up and learn all this crap, and I don't care about
it. I started reading those, and I like the setting more than anything else. Some of the technical parts of portraying the story, whether it's through characters talking to you, that kind of has the air of some of the other Bethesda games where it's just kind of not really scripted well, or the angles are real weird. Like, it's just a person talking to you, and it's not the most dynamic thing. But the world with I think they call it a whale punk industrial kind of setting the ship fishing towns and these weird things that are all run on whale oil. It's cool. Digging into the little things that you can pick up, it's not that great. They have a few audio diaries like BioShock, but they really, that they really pick up what games like Deus Ex and BioShock do. And playing through this again, I played through it before playing Thief, and I realized Thief is a lot like this game, but it just does everything poorly. it has the little hub part, but it's way too big. It's segmented with all these loading screens. This has that's the right amount where you feel familiar, and there's new parts that open up near the little tavern area where you can upgrade your parts. You always feel you're progressing, and then the gameplay is really cool. I guess we can move on to the the powers part
that's,
of it. But
that's what I was going to talk about next. Is I was going to say the game. What I like that it does, in, instead of the Fallout and Elder Scrolls games, is you don't necessarily you level up in a very Bioshocky way, where instead of like actually gaining a level and getting new attributes or stats or whatever, you actually just have more powers that you can unlock. And these powers really, really make for a more effective game. And some of them are more. You have these magic runes you can pick up, and they are artifacts carved in the whalebone. And you can have different powers, like you can see through walls and see enemies, or you can see their line of vision, or you can increase your health. So they have a lot of traditional stuff, but then they also have that kind of Bioshocky element where they, you know, affect, give you powers, basically. And,
yeah.
Like, you can send a swarm of deadly rats on people, or you could freeze
time.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorites.
There's a lot of, you know, yeah, so.
I immediately upgraded the blink thing where you have this, at first it starts as like a short distance teleportation ability. And it's just like all the things that are kind of like annoying about most stealth games where you have to wait. It gives you an ability to just get to high ground or like get behind an enemy and then like, you know, choke them out, or you can either kill them or you can just knock them out. Another thing is really cool is the shadow kill thing, where if you turn, enemies aren't aware of your presence, they'll just immediately turn to ash. And then if you upgrade it the second time, then all enemies will just turn to ash no matter what, even if they see you. And that's just great because you don't have to worry about hiding bodies in dumpsters or
exactly. Yeah, because it gets rid of all the things that I hate about stealth games. So
yeah, you can just play it however you want it to. Like you could ghost through it, and you can definitely do that. But I think like the sweet spot is kind of being a little chaotic and but just kind of raining, because you can still like maybe kill about like I think I read like 20-30% of the enemies and still have like the good non-chaotic ending. And even if you do have the chaotic ending, like there's some permutations on that where you can still like save a certain person when you're using your power. So it's really cool.
So I haven't beat the game yet, but I was reading about that, how there's two different endings and how, like, I've already been experiencing how decisions you make do affect the world around you, which I like that part of it, but I feel like that's normally I would be all for that, of saying, oh, that's great, like, you know, replay value, get a different ending, but I actually feel that the game, because it clearly wants you to go the stealth path, because that's considered to be the quote-unquote good ending, I think that's a little bit impartial on what this game does so well in giving you that variety, but then saying you really should do it this way if you want the better ending. And then also
a lot of the really cool powers are like killing powers.
I was gonna say, and it also denies you half the fun of the game, because a lot of it is these really unique ways of killing people. And I know it sounds so violent, but it's true. And by hiding that behind, or putting that in the bad ending story path, it makes it a bit of a crutch to like, you want to play this game and like have more fun, well, you're going to get a bad ending for doing that. It punishes you.
I think that's that holdover from like some of the older stealth games. And
hopefully
they change it for Dishonored 2, where they have a better balance of like, here's all your stealth power-ups, and you can go down that tree. And then just have it very clearly delineated between the stealth and the chaotic.
Yeah, I think a way that addressing that would be to make it more like, oh, if this segment is a lot harder if you do it with the stealth path. So if you do it with the stealth path, then you meet some objective. Or this one is way harder if you go the chaos path, but you should do that so that you can get you do get that taste of both, but if you take the challenge of doing whatever one, then you can get that better ending or whatever it is. We'll see. And actually, it's a good thing you mentioned that, because, at E3, it was already kind of leaked before, but they made the official announcement that Dishonored 2 is coming out. And that was very, very exciting, because in this day and age, in the modern consoles, even this game came out in 2012, having new IP, new series is just really from AAA developers is getting rarer and
rarer.
Yeah, so this game being announced, released, and as successful as it was is a really, really great. It's a big deal, and it certainly matters more and more as we're moving forward, because AAA games are costing millions and millions more, and so it's really rare when a new IP gets announced. That's why at E3 when we were talking about it, it was really interesting about the people from Killzone making that Zero Dark game or whatever it was.
Zero Dawn. Such a weird title, but that one looks really cool. I think we only saw like a little CGI trailer of the sequel to Dishonored, But you got like a new protagonist, which can be fresh as like a female protagonist, what's an older version of a character from this game. And it just feels like, I think they're doubling down on the powers, which a lot of people loved about this one. So that's cool.
Right.
I think just the moment to moment gameplay is really cool on this.
Yeah.
And just hopefully they ratchet up like the story and characters even more, because there's a lot of cool moments in this, but yeah, if they can balance that out, like we can easily top this. Because although like this is really high, like I don't know, it kind of is in that thing between like, oh, is it a classic in the making or just like a really solid like IP? And I think a lot of reviewers, like they obviously want to like, oh, I want to see more of this new IP, so they're gonna give it a higher score,
right.
Which is fine because I definitely like to hear. I love stealth games that really mix action well, and this is definitely one of those.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a pretty good classic because I think that this game does a lot of good with a lot of. It takes a lot of inspiration from other games and puts it to good use here. And I like that it gives Bethesda a different feather in their cap because Bethesda's an outstanding game developer and publisher. But a lot of their games, like Elder Scrolls and Fallout games, as much as I love those series, they're pretty similar in so many ways. And this one takes, it's kind of like the portal to Half-Life for Valve, where it's like a different style of game that takes a lot of the like elements and engine and style design and gameplay of its main series, but then it does something a little bit different. Because in this game, like one of the things I like about it is that you can just go and steal crap and it doesn't matter. Like I like, whereas in Fallout, it affects your morality and it does all these things. And like, again, I love that about the Fallout games, but I don't want that in every single Bethesda game. Like I don't want Doom to have that.
You don't have to
either.
Worry about like encumbrance or anything. Like you just steal everything. And that definitely comes from like the Thief, the older games and even the newest latest version. It just the mechanics are really versatile and I really like the gameplay or the setting design. Yeah. Like there's just a lot of like verticality. You'll see one area like some high official that you have to like assassinate, and he has like a secret room where he's playing music and two people are looking for a document. And then later on, you're like, oh, this is how I get to this area. Like, everything kind of snakes in on itself, and I really like that. And
very very Zelda-like,
Yeah, like, you hit. There's a lot of, like, weird secret passages, and it's perfect that it's first person, because you're constantly looking for, you know, coins or vials or some switch on a wall.
Right, yeah. No, this game, I think it's really nice. I think they,
I mean, I guess I'm playing it the second time, so I do like it a lot.
That's true, too, yeah. So, anyway, I mean, I'm not going to say much else about it. I'm just going to say that if you had a PS Plus account, it was free, it last month or 2 months ago? So you missed that.
Yeah,
but
not too far.
But it's out there. It's been out for a long time, so I'm sure you have to be able to grab this for less than $10 at this point. And ton of DLC for it as well, which I have heard good things about, but I need to beat the game before
I haven't played
want to touch it.
There's like three of them, right? I think altogether there's three.
That sounds
Knife
right. I mean,
Dunwall,
I don't know. Yeah.
The Brigmore Witches. But yeah, it's a fun game.
Yeah,
nice.
Very, very fun game. So Kyle and I both approved Dishonored, which you can get for the PC, PS3, and Xbox 360. And I'm sure when the second one comes out, there's going to be an HD remastered of the first one for all the next-gen stuff. So don't worry. You'll have a chance to play it on that stuff, too.
Well, that's been announced, actually. There's an HD version coming out this fall.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
We got to get that out before.
Any game that was mildly successful last-gen immediately gets an HD release, yes.
Yeah.
all right. So that is Dishonored. Lastly, we're going to be discussing Megadeth's second classic album, Peace Sells. But who's buying?
Talked about metal a few times on this podcast, and I figured let's jump back into the metal pool yet again, but this time we're looking at Megadeth's 1986 thrash metal album. Peace sells, dot, dot, dot. But who's buying? And I hadn't listened to Megadeth at all before this. And I was really... I listened to this the remastered kind of version with the 25th anniversary celebration with a bunch of live tracks. And man, both of those go hand in hand. Like, I'm trying to think of like what, which part of that edition is more like riff heavy. And I don't know, like I really like the album by itself. Like it goes by in like 36 minutes, like really quickly with all these like crazy riffs. But then the live part is really cool too. Just the way they just intro the set and then play a lot of their hits from this, but then a lot of things from the time. And I was really, really struck by it. Like another band that kind of brings the rock in a very, very metal way. And it's also a really well produced record. Originally, just some history on it. Like it was the original intention that it was going to come out on Combat Records. And then the first mix was kind of co-produced by Randy Burns, which they've worked with before. And then Capitol Records bought the rights to the album and hired another producer to mix it. And so with that background, like even though it's got a bunch of different people like working on it, like it still retains like a lot of the just kind of that power chugging like rifftastic stuff that you expect from a metal band in the 80s. And this is my introduction to it, but I was pretty surprised by it. What did you think about this one? I think you said that you'd listened to a few songs from Megadeth, Daniel.
Yeah, so Megadeth was one of those bands that I certainly was aware of growing up in the 90s. Like, I was aware of all these metal bands, like, you know, Megadeth and Anthrax and AC/DC, mostly in name Slayer. And not so much in what they're... Yeah, Slayer. Like, mostly in name and not so much, like, who they were, what their songs were. And it was a few years ago that I finally did listen to a little bit more Megadeth. And I had heard some of the songs on this album before and some of their other hits. And it was really... But this is my first time listening to this album, and I'm really glad you chose it, because first and foremost, it's a great album. It's excellent. I mean, metal albums... It's interesting, because all these metal albums from the 80s have really aged so surprisingly well. I've actually been on a bit of a hit lately. Like, I listened to a little bit of classic Slayer, you know, as we just mentioned. And
yeah, that's another band AC/DC. I haven't really listened to.
And it's really interesting going back and listening to this stuff, because there's a lot of... The energy of those albums is so much more... I'm much more interested in that energy than a lot of metal albums coming out today. I'm old. And and this one is a really fascinating one, because Megadeth was one of those bands I never really gave the time to. I just thought they had a kind of stupid name, and they didn't really have anything that I thought was bringing anything new to the table. And looking back now, I think they were way ahead of their time with what they were doing, especially so early in their career. This is just their second album. And if you look at what was happening at the time, the album comes out in 1986. And at this time, metal is still a very, very... It's there with hip-hop as far as being a stigmatized genre that you do not listen to as a youth. Like, that is corrupting you. It is bad. Yeah. And
wasn't hair metal, like, very popular then?
Well, and see, that, like, and the counterpoint... It's interesting you say that, because you had bands like Cinderella and Poison who were doing this quote-unquote metal, which was nowhere near it, but it was like... But don't get me wrong, there was a lot of salaciousness going on with that genre as well. But the diehard metalheads, your Metallica, your Slayer, your Megadeth, they were like, we are not like that at all. Like, we do not associate with that. We're not doing that. and they were absolutely right, because they were a completely different genre.
I mean, it's all, you can definitely hear that. Like, it's all about the pure love of the music and the skill, like the guitarist, David Mustaine and Chris Pullen, like just like these countless riffs and solos, and like it's almost like prog rock. Like,
yes,
it kind of comes down from like those 70s big bands, or like Led Zeppelin has like a lot of that beginning of metal thing where they just go on these crazy like rock odysseys, but then everything kind of stitches together in like just the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Black Sabbath was carrying that torch for a while too. But what I like about what Megadeth and Metallica and Slayer did at the time is they brought about more of a like looking at, instead of be having that epic prog, they not only did have that epic prog sound, which you're correct, they incorporated themes that were much more what we associate with a lot of modern metal that made it so stigmatized, because the songs were about anarchy and death and the world going to hell. And this album is exactly about that. I mean, it's totally in the heart of the Reagan era and about like Cold War destruction. And it's really, really good. I mean, it's a product of the time.
Yeah, Rust in Peace is another one that I listened to that after this. And there's another one that has a lot of those same kind of themes and concepts running throughout it. And it makes sense that a lot of the metal groups that we listen to now, like even like something like Mastodon, which is a little more like psychedelic kind of metal, like they're listening to, they probably listen to a lot of these bands because they're very conceptual in nature, but like really tight with their the things that they're like, the bands are really tight, like the way they construct their songs.
Yeah, no, then, and that's a great point, because you know Dave Mustaine, lead singer and guitarist for Megadeth. I mean, there are some monster riffs on this album that are insanely classic. And most notably is, I mean, the thing that I always knew Megadeth for, but without knowing that I knew it, was back in the day, funny that we did the MTV show, MTV News, whenever they did MTV News, they played the bass riff from the title track here. It was always that little doom, 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 and then it was like MTV News. Yeah, oh, that was nice. that was totally that was how I was introduced to Megadeth. I didn't know it, but that's how I was. And then later on, I was like, oh, that's the bass riff from MTV News. And then I found out it was this. And so,
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just like, just such an energy, like these lightning fast kind of like, it makes sense that people called them like thrash, because it's just like, it's not necessarily that's like violent, but it's just like, it's like a blinding like hit. Like assault with the riffs and all that. And even something like, they take like a Willie Dixon cover with I Ain't Superstitious, and then they give it that like Megadeth sound. Like all these songs like Wake Up Dead, Devil's Island, and Good Morning, Black Friday, like they really showcase their talent. Just like that raw musician ability.
Mm-hmm. And I think, to the band's credit, this album is really short and to the point. It's only 8 songs, 36 minutes. And a lot of metal nowadays, like, you know, like your Mastodons, I like Mastodon a lot, but sometimes it feels like they're just like laying on one solo after another, which technically is incredibly impressive, but it can get very, you know, it can definitely get repetitive and just kind of like...
You can kind of see the extension there where like these were... guys still reined it in and kept it like together, like as a piece.
Yeah.
Whereas,
you
know, a few decades down the line, like people kind of both took like the dark tone and then went to its like crazy conclusion, and then also took the riffs and then just kind of blew it out a little too much.
Yeah, exactly. which has resulted in some great songs. I mean, even Metallica at the time, like, you know, Master of Puppets was a 6-minute, or their first music video, One, was like an 8-minute long epic. Like they certainly, you could do epic.
You certainly do
the length is not necessarily the detriment of metal, but doing it just to do it also doesn't help you either. Like what I like, the songs here are really tight and to the point, and the riffs on here are just so outstanding. And I like the content of the album too. I mean, you have this very, all these songs are very, some of them deal with satanic imagery and some of them do with like everyday things. Like the opening song is about a guy who's like cheating on his wife, and then he's sneaking into his own house, and he knows that if his wife finds out, she's going to kill him. I mean, it's it's dealing with some dark themes, but I like that it's just like going straight for it too. And
that makes it relatable, like that story. Like they have plenty of songs that are a little more like apocalyptic or post-apocalyptic, but then they sprinkle in a lot of stuff that's makes sense for just like, you know, a regular person listening to it.
Yeah, like, well, like The Conjuring has all the, it's a satanic ceremony, and it's got the devil there with his salesman and stuff, and it's got some magic reference. It's got all these things going on. So yeah, you have like, it definitely goes through the, like, I guess everyday living, and then like the metal, you know, all this dark satanic magic imagery that a lot of metal at the time was known for.
And I really like David Mustaine. He's the lead vocalist and lead in, rhythm guitarist. Like, I love his vocals. Like, it hits that right mixture. Like, it's not too dark, but then it also kind of has like I don't know, a theater to it. Like he, he's just as like, in the in your face as the, you know, the guitars that are riffing along and chugging along. Like he really sells like, these big conceptual songs.
Right. No, that's a very good point. He's what I like about it is that he's audible. Like you can make out what he's saying, which I'm not trying to be mean there. It's just like a lot of metal, they get this, you know, super dark voice that
they can get into. Like it's more about the atmosphere than the actual like storytelling.
And for him, you could, it's very clear, but it's also got this little bit, theatrical is a really good word to describe it. And it's also got this cool disgust to it. Like he's just angry and pissed off and, doesn't know what to do, and I like that tone to it. It fits, and it's very blunt and honest. And the album felt like, you know, it's treating the apocalypse as both a, I guess, like a warning and a party at the same time. And I like that. I, you know, Peace Sells is about, you know, nuclear war, but then it's also a really catchy song. And so it's interesting having that paradox going on. And and the whole album, this whole album holds up really well. I listened to it a couple times, and I want to definitely go back and listen to more of this stuff.
With all like the dark tones, like whether it's like Black Magic or like Devil's Island, it's kind of referring to like the a former French penal colony off the coast of French Guiana, and then a lot of the lyrics are, you know, talking about the condemned prisoner waiting execution. Like, although it's really dark, like a lot of these work as like pop songs, like with the crazy Rick riffs, and it's just like really memorable. It's good like listening to it more than once. Like, it's definitely a classic.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I'm really surprised that it's taking me this long to get around to listening to a Megadeth album. Want to go back and listen to more because it's, I feel like a lot of the metal.
It's one of those genres I didn't really like. I'm still catching up. Like, I didn't. I remember like. You know, there's a stigma with, like, oh, whether it's your parents talking about, like, oh, it's Black Magic or whatever. But a lot of it's, like, really, just, like, really strong music. And then also, like, just good writing and, you know, thinking about the album as a concept instead of just, like, this weird collection of things.
Yeah. Well, and also, it's, like, after all these years have passed and the controversy has died away, it's like, does the music hold up? And that's what it comes down to. And with a lot of the music, no, it doesn't. Like, it gets really bad, but then you have some music here that really does, like this stuff does, or you have like Public Enemy stuff like that. Right. If the music is good, then it will be listenable here. But you're right, it isn't something that at least I'm not going to go out and sync, because like I'm indie rock kid from the 2000s. I'm listening to my you know, my Arcade Fire and stuff. So it's not what I'm going to go to, but there's definitely something here. And as I'm getting older, I am starting to have more of an appreciation for this stuff and not feel so like, I mean, I lost this a long time ago, but I don't have that, you know, oh, I shouldn't listen to that anymore. That's not my genre. Like I have no shame for the things that I like, that I, you know, love.
I kind of see it as this, like, I'll have my mainstay of kind of like alternative indie rock kind of stuff, but I really cherish like these kind of musical vacations from like the norm.
Yeah, but all I was going to say is that the problem is that it's hard for me to remember to go back to these things and listen to them, because Megadeth is not something that is high on my radar of, oh, yeah, I need to listen to that album. Like, if a reissue came out that caught my eye, and those do serve a purpose. Those have got me into things before. So sometimes it takes that kind of stuff. So I'm really happy you chose this, because otherwise I don't know what would have gotten me into listening to this band again. So, yeah.
Yeah, because not every band comes back for a reunion tour or, you know.
Right.
It's pretty much the reissue, and then those can get buried as well. Like, sometimes they're not covered or they're just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, any other final thoughts, Kyle, on Megadeth's Peace Sells with Who's Buying?
No, not really. Glad we picked it. That's about it.
Yeah, me too. So, that is Peace Sells, but what are you buying? And it has been out for...
Resident Evil 4.
Came out in 1986, and it is out there for your mini listening. And then there was a reissue that came out in 2011, I believe. Yeah, 2011, so that's certainly worth your time to listen to as well. I really liked it. Kyle did too. Glad we chose it to listen to. And that is all for episode number 159 of Test Patterns. Thank you, Kyle, first and foremost, for...
You're welcome. Thank you.
...talking. Yes, you're welcome. Thank you, me, also. I'm the second most. And thank you, listener, for making it this far. If you'd like to show another way of thanking us, as Kyle shows me all the time, I show us all the time, too, you can support the show forever, even after it's over in a few more weeks. You can still support the show forever and ever. Amen. And how do you do that? By buying things on Amazon, but not just by buying it. You have to click a link that we give you. So if you click that link, what happens? Amazon sends us money, and you don't spend any extra. Just Amazon sends it, because I've said Amazon probably close to, you know, 300 times in the course of all the episodes we've done here. No, way more than that. And All you got to do is click on that link. Where's that link at? Why, the link is on our home on the web, testpatterns.libsyn.com. There's a banner at the top. But if you have ad block on, that may not show up. So where else is it? Well, if you read this description of what you're listening to, it's right there, too. If you just click on that link there, there it is. And if you like us on Facebook, facebook.com/testpatterns, it's always going to be there, too. So there's many places where this link lives. And if you're hearing this, or you still know about us and you're going to keep knowing about us in the future, even after episodes are done, always remember that link. It does keep us very happy. Thank you for listening, as always. And we will be back next week with another regular episode. So, but we are coming near the end. So if you have any suggestions for a final episode, anything you want us to talk about, this is it's getting to the deadline, people. We got to hear something soon, because we're definitely running out of things. But otherwise, we'll know what we'll do. We'll still give you a bang to go out on. So don't you worry at all. Otherwise, that's all for this week. Thank you for listening. We'll see you again next week. Same time, same place, same internet. Kyle.
What are you selling? Now that's a weapon.
Welcome. Got a selection of good things on sale, stranger. Got some rare things on sale, stranger. What are you buying? What are you selling? Ah, I'll buy it at a high price. Thank you. Is that all, stranger? Not enough cash, stranger. Come back any time. A wise choice, mate. Its ammo will penetrate just about anything. Ah, a choice of an avid gun collector. It's a nice gun, stranger. I see you have an eye for things. Gun's not just about shooting. It's about reloading. You'll know what I'm talking about. Not only will you need cash, but you'll need guts to buy that weapon. Stranger, stranger. Now that's a weapon. Ah, an awesome choice, stranger. It's got a 3-round rapid-fire capability, although it uses up ammo rather quickly. Stranger! What you need that for? Going hunting an elephant? Ah!